Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
All right, hour number two, which is also for tonight, our final hour. Georgia basketball coverage about an hour away. Dogs with another one of those 6:30 tips tonight from South Carolina.
You're telling me we're not the prime time game tonight?
No. Well, yeah, on the SEC network, maybe.
Well, we're the first game of the doubleheader, though.
Yeah.
That's kind of the, you catch the last couple minutes of that before you play, before you watch the next
game.
Okay,
so Tennessee-Arkansas.
Which we now know is Tennessee-Arkansas.
That's what they really want us to tune into. Now, the highlight game definitely is LSU in Florida.
I imagine that's on big boy ESPN, or at least two.
I would think that's we're looking at regular, well, we're on the deuce for that one. That's 9 o'clock.
Okay.
So the lead-in for that one is Virginia and Virginia Tech at 7.
Speaking of channels for games being on, I remember when the ACC network debuted last fall, and obviously Clemson and Georgia Tech played the opening game on that,
you know,
similar to how Texas A&M and South Carolina did the opening night of the SEC network. You said that was probably going to be the only time you ever watched the ACC network. Is that still true now that it's basketball season? Because Duke Wake Forest was on the ACC network last night.
I didn't see. No, it is. I swear.
You didn't
I haven't
see it?
Seen the ACC network since.
Wow.
Since Tech and Clemson played. There wasn't even another college football game on there this year that I watched.
Really? Because I feel like I watched at least one or two college games on there, but watching Duke and Wake Forest last night, it dawned on me. I'm like, wow, I think this is the first time I've turned it on this channel since football season ended.
Well, the only time I watch the SEC network is if Georgia's playing on it.
Really? You don't like that weird 4 o'clock game when Mississippi State plays Vanderbilt?
If I've got money on it, I might tune in to see, you know, because I've got action on Kentucky and Vandy at 4 o'clock. But normally, if that's the case, like then Georgia's probably playing at 3:30 anyway.
I was gonna say it's never like your primary screen, but maybe it's on your laptop, your iPad, your phone. Like you got a second screen going.
No, I've watched the SEC network from time to time.
Yeah,
because that LSU and Texas A&M game was on there. That crazy overtime.
That's right, it was.
Game.
Yes, it was.
But mostly though, if I'm on there though, it's just because like tonight I'll have the SEC network on because I'll probably
of course
get home at some point and tune into Georgia and South Carolina. But I don't.
Hopefully the game's not out of reach by that point.
Yeah, but I don't make it really a point to watch it at any other time. And then the ACC network. I can honestly tell you, I have not logged onto that channel since last August when Tech and Clemson kicked off.
So you only caught the highlights of Duke Wake Forest last night.
I know the result, but
you know
I haven't.
Okay.
Yeah,
I mean, I only
I know
turned
Duke
it
lost
on
in overtime, but I haven't seen any.
I was watching. I think it was Alabama Mississippi State last night, and I just saw in the bottom crawl that Duke and Wake Forest were tied after one overtime. I was like, oh well, let's see what this looks like. That was when I turned the game on.
But
then I was like, wow, I think this is the first time I've watched the ACC network since football season.
But then you've also got to figure out, too, that it's even on there. Because you're probably your first instinct still is to go, like, if Duke's playing, that's going to be on at least ESPNU.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, do you still have, like traditional television, like DirecTV or whatever, where you have, like, channel numbers?
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, so I do like streaming television, so it's literally only the network names, and I have like a tab where I can just pull up all sports channels. So like at the top of the list, Duke, Wake Forest, ACC Network. That's how I found it. Now, yes, if I was searching for just the channel itself, I probably would have gone to ESPN immediately.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, why is Duke playing on the ACC Network?
I don't even know what the numbers are. Like I know all the ESPNs and the sports channels are like 2-something, so I always just go 200.
I was going to say.
And then I start scrolling down from there.
We used to have that before I put my parents on streaming, and like ESPN was like 206, News was like 07, 2 was like 08, U was like 09, and the SEC Network was 610. I believe
I think it's 611.
611. Okay, I was close.
And I think the Big Ten network.
Big
might
Ten
be
was
610.
That's right. Because SEC's 611. Speed Channel used to be 613. That went away. But yeah, you have like those secondary channels in the higher end.
Well, it drives me crazy because I have no idea what number the Braves play on. So like once the summer rolls around and if I'm home and I'm gonna turn on the Braves, I start at 600 and I just start paging down until I see it.
The Fox Sports South and the Fox Sports Southeast are like 648, 649.
They're in that neighborhood.
They're in that neighborhood. Again, this has been years since I've had that kind of television, but I do remember that.
Yeah. And then sometimes too, though, like it won't say Braves versus Cardinals. It'll just say MLB baseball.
Right. And you got to read the little description on it.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's a hassle sometimes to find where the Braves play. Speaking of the Braves too, like I don't know, like Freddie Freeman they're going to shut him down for about a week because he's having elbow soreness.
That's literally my first question in the 5 at 5.
Well, let's do it. The 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. And Tyler, you may fire when ready.
So as you kind of preempted there, obviously Freddie Freeman had the bone spurs in his elbow during the playoffs last year, and he even said, you know, had we made it out of the divisional series, I may not have been able to play in the championship series if we got that far. And now, obviously, he had the offseason surgery, everything was fine, but now, we're 4 spring training games in, and he's already having inflammation and, you know, just shut him down for the rest of spring. I mean, is this something that could be a concern going into the season?
I would lean toward yes, since it bothered him at the end of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, even into the playoffs. And he did have surgery. But so, I mean, the question, and he played two of the first 3 games of spring training, and then he was in the lineup yesterday and they scratched him. And now today the team says it's a precaution. We're not, you know, terribly concerned about it, but they're going to hold him out for a week. But okay, so he comes back in a week and he's fine with the rest. But the concern I would have then is just going to be something that you play basically every day. And what do you have? Once the season starts, you get maybe 3-4 off days a month.
I was going to say, looking at since he came up full time to the majors, that, you know, don't count 2010 when he got called up late, but from 2011 to 2019, he's only played less than 120 games twice. That was in 15 and 17. I think both of those were due to injury. He's maxed out at 162 twice. He played 158 last year. So, yeah, he's playing pretty much every single day. And he's 30 years old now. So, obviously, you know, when you have injuries and stuff like that, it can linger definitely a lot longer the older you get.
Well, and that's just with this particular injury now, and he is coming off the surgery, is this going to be something that as he, you know, plays and there's, you know, some excessive use of it, is it just going to bother him all season and maybe he will have to take a couple days off? I don't think it would hurt anyway. I mean, I thought last year, because you had Acuna played pretty much every game, Albies played pretty much every game. Yep. Freeman never wanted to come out of the lineup, and that's great. Those guys want to play. Of course they do. They don't want to sit, but yeah, I don't know. At periods of time during the year, it might not hurt to get those guys a day off or so if you're in first place and you know your season's going to get stretched into the postseason. But that would be my worry with Freeman, would be, all right, so he plays a couple games and he's fine.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden, you know, it does. It tightens and it starts to get sore on him. And then what's he going to want to do? Play through it once the season begins? Or are you just going to have to sit him down for, you know, a couple games here and there, or maybe even a week at a time?
And I was going to say, if you try playing through it, then you risk, you know, making it worse, and then he's gone for the entire season and the playoffs. And then, you know, you're out of luck at that point.
But, I mean, even in a scenario where they give him rest, and like in this situation now, all right, well, we'll sit you down for a week. I mean, the Braves don't need Freeman to be out of the lineup for a week.
No,
it's
they
one
don't.
Thing to take a day off here or there.
Right. It's just, it's got to be a delicate balance of how you handle this.
Yeah, so I don't know. To me, I would be I'd be worried about it, but it's the same thing that plagued him at the end of last season. He went and had the surgery, but it's still, here it is popping up already in spring training.
Well, and here's the thing, too. When it was bothering him during the playoffs, I mean, he obviously didn't express how bad it really was. And then obviously after the season ends, you find out, oh, he had to have surgery on it, and it was a pretty big deal. So it's like, you know, how much is he withholding right now that we're in spring training, the season's about to start? Is he really telling us the true severity of it?
Yeah. I think you could see it even, man, at the tail end of last year, he didn't hit a home run He hit a home run on September 1st last year and then didn't homer again for the rest of the season. He did homer in one of the playoff games.
It wasn't like his last week of the regular season really rough, too. Like, I know going into the playoffs, I think he went through a rough
stretch. Well, he had all the strikeouts.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Yep.
He struck out against, in that last series against the Mets, he struck out four times.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. But yeah, he didn't home. He hit two home runs on September 1st last year, and that was it. He went the whole rest of the month without homering.
Have you ever had, like, bursitis of your elbow? Ooh, yeah. I have. It's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never had, like, the bone spurs, but I've had, like, the nasty inflammation. It's rough.
Yeah.
And it you know, it's not just your arm hurting. Like, it takes a toll on your entire body. So I can't imagine what trying to play baseball, what that would be like.
It's, I mean, he had the surgery to remove it. There were some loose fragments, the bone spurs, and that was right after the season, so you are going on a couple of months.
Well, that's the thing. That's another concern. It's like, okay, well, so a lot of time's passed, you know, doing whatever rest, rehabilitation he's need to. Now we're getting back into baseball, and it's already flaring up.
Yeah. I know that's the I'd be a little bit worried about it. And it'd be one thing if, fine, he can rest some and he'll come back and be okay, but that's the point with Freeman. Once the real season starts, you don't need him to be like on again and off again. You do need him to play most every game.
Is there a first base prospect that's up there with him that they're high on? I've only gotten to see like one spring training game so far.
Right now, no, I think they've got Yonder Alonso in camp, who has subbed for him now at first base. But I mean, maybe did Riley play there a couple games last season when he did sit? But
I feel like he did. I can't remember. And again, there was only four games that he sat in the regular season. It's hard to think back.
Yeah, but no, that's, you know, Freddie's the guy there.
So hopefully it's not that bad. And I mean, I'd be fine with him shutting him down the rest of spring. That's the thing to me too. And I think on one of the Yankee sports centers that are mentioning somebody else dealing with an injury already, like, a lot of these guys don't need all of spring training. Like, I can understand a game or two, just kind of get yourself back into the rhythm and obviously the practices and stuff like that. But playing this, what, over a month of spring training games, like, you know, Not everybody needs that.
Well, you know, maybe you want the tail end of it right before the season starts.
Like, you know, you have those couple, three games right before you start your first series at the beginning of April. Yeah, that makes sense. But, you know, does Freddie Freeman need a month and a half of spring training games? No. I mean, you can make the argument, yeah, younger guys, maybe the Acuñas and Albies, and obviously some of the prospects in the farm system, sure. But, I mean, these superstar guys that have been around for a while, they don't need all that.
Well, now what he needs, though, is he does need to take a week off and then come back and see how he feels.
That's true. And
that's the key is, like, he'll probably feel fine at first, but then...
will it flare up again?
Right, as he plays a couple games and has a few at-bats, is it just going to be something that continues to bother him?
That's right. Moving on, the 5-at-5, it was announced today that James Franklin at Penn State getting a new contract worth up to $38.2 million. Obviously, Ohio State's had a strong hold on the Big Ten over the last couple years. I mean, Franklin, I think he's locked down through, is it 24, 25? It's going to be around for a couple more years, definitely. But anyway, over those next couple years,
Six
more years, so 26. I mean, at any point, does he finally get over that Ohio State hump? And obviously he beat them that one year, they went to the Rose Bowl, but like truly overcoming that hump and beating them consistently.
Yeah, they went to the Rose Bowl and Ohio State went to the playoff that year.
And Penn State won the Big Ten that year.
Yeah, because Ohio State didn't even play in the game.
They lose to Iowa, somebody else, didn't they? They had two bad losses.
Yeah.
Or one bad loss.
But they beat Ohio State by like a point.
Yeah.
And made it.
Same Ohio State team that got shut out by Clemson.
Yeah, that one. Do they get over the... I mean, they've already done it before, so I'd say, yeah, they'd do it again. Does Penn State stay at least like number two in that division?
Are they consistently a top dog going forward?
Yes, with Franklin. I think they are. And I think they've got a chance to even stay ahead of what we've seen out of Michigan.
I was going to say, you know, you look at the trajectory of Franklin and Jim Harbaugh, if there's any coach that has a chance of taking down Ohio State year after year, it'd probably be Franklin.
Well, yeah.
I mean, Harbaugh's crashing and burning every year.
I mean, he's actually done it.
Right.
Harbaugh hasn't yet. You know, Michigan State right now is a mess. I know they hired Mel Tucker, and
they're going to be on a rebuild.
Yeah, he'll recruit that well there, but, I mean, D'Antonio did not leave there on good terms.
Literally.
Yeah, right, the day before signing day.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how.
And coming off just a bad season anyhow.
They played Wake in the Pinstripe Bowl, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And they beat them.
Yeah. I was going to say, I didn't know.
That's some Jamie Newman tape.
I was going to say, I didn't know because that game was on. We were in here one day. Me and Jeff were in here. And obviously, we didn't know. We were watching the future of Georgia's offense play that day.
Yeah. Well, I think what he threw, like three touchdown passes.
I think he did.
Yeah.
It was like a cold, I think kind of wet, sloppy game, though.
Yeah, they played it that was the game in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Which I think next year they're going to bring a game to Fenway.
Oh, are they? Well, yeah. I know they've talked about. They've kicked around the Wrigley Field Bowl game, but I don't think none of the Big Ten teams want to play in that because the Big Ten schools want to go south bowl season.
Northwestern played that or tried to play a home game there, and the dimensions were so small, both teams had to go one direction.
Like, yeah,
you literally can't go into the other end zone.
Yeah, because of the outfield wall.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, like they have that nice ivy covering it up.
Yep.
Behind the ivy is a brick wall.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, I mean, we know Wrigley's like the smallest park in all of baseball. What do you think was going to happen?
Right. So I mean, you can't have guys running into that brick wall.
No.
So yeah, it was weird how they had to flip the field and just go the same direction. But yeah. I think they played. It was like Northwestern and Illinois played there.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, that's certainly not Ohio State and Michigan or something like that. But yeah, I could see, you know, how that could become a problem. And you know, trying to get a bowl game there. I know that obviously they play the Miami Beach Bowl down in Marlins Park. They play the Cheez-It Bowl where the Diamondbacks play. They don't play one in Houston where the Astros play.
Do they
play.
Still play the one in whatever the stadium where the Giants play, San Francisco Giants play? They used to have a bowl game there.
That is now the Red Box Bowl.
Yeah, they moved it to Santa
That's
Clara, right?
That used to be the Emerald Bowl where they'd play going down one of the foul lines at AT&T Park.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the sidelines were on the same side of the field.
When the 49ers built their new stadium, they went through. I kind of like bowl games in baseball stadiums because it's just kind of quirky. The St. Petersburg Bowl left Tropicana. It's now the Gasparilla Bowl. I guess they're trying to add the Fenway Bowl or Red Sox Bowl, whatever they're going to call it for 2020.
Yeah. I like when you do have scenarios where, okay, so here's the two teams have to share basically
That's right.
the same
There's
sideline.
Like this imaginary divider between the two of them, but they're really like 10 feet apart.
Yeah, like they used to have that. Once upon a time, the Packers would play at least one game, if not more, every year in Old County Stadium in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the Brewers played. And that's so you had this NFL game where the two teams were on the same sideline.
Well, God, for a long time there, just about every city was building those multi-purpose stadiums to, you know, save everybody a little bit of money. And now we don't even have that anymore. Now that the Raiders are leaving Oakland.
Yeah, the A's and Raiders were the last. And the A's might be getting out of there soon, too.
I was going to say it, and I've never been to whatever it's called now. It's the Coliseum. It's had like 20 different
names.
Yeah,
I think names. It's still O.co.
But it's like, it's one of like the worst facilities in all of sports just because the upkeep has been horrible.
Yeah, and it's like terrifying too when you go. I've been to it a couple times.
Really?
Some A's games.
Really?
And, you know, it's just, you know, there's graffiti, the walls are tagged. And
also,
well, and during Raiders games too, like of course with the fans that show up to that.
Well, and also like when
it's frightening.
Its dimensions are more fit for football. So when you go to an A's game, you're like a mile away from the field, right?
Yeah, well, and you also, they don't have it, it's not open for A's games, but for Raiders games, they have just this one upper deck is higher than I've ever seen any upper deck.
Mm-hmm.
So you're way up there if you're sitting there. But yeah, it's kind of a frightening stadium. But yeah, they're gone. So that was it. The Dolphins and Marlins did it. I mean, once upon a time, the Falcons and Braves used to do it. The Vikings and Twins played in the old Hubert 8 H. Humphrey Metrodome together.
That's right.
But they've all got new yards now.
I was going to say, you know, back then, God, stadiums didn't cost nearly as much back then anyway, but it felt like they were trying to be a little more economical for the city, but now it's like, oh no, every sports team needs a new stadium / arena every 10 years.
Well, yeah, every owner figured out, like, hey, we can get the taxpayers to pay for it, so why... The baseball team can have a stadium. The football team can have a stadium.
And you know what happens when those people don't pay? You send your team to Los Angeles like the Chargers.
Yeah. I don't, now that and there's got to be some city that's always open that you can use that as a tactic. And
I think San Antonio is one of the buzzword cities now. Like, oh, I'm just going to go to San Antonio.
I would assume St. Louis is probably still on there.
They have the Battle Hawks in the XFL now. They're good.
Yeah. At XFL, not doing well.
It's not. They have a third of their original audience.
I gave it a chance in week two. I watched some games, and I didn't see any of it last weekend, though, because it was just not good.
I was going to say, my dad's been watching games pretty consistently, and I watched a little bit of it with him. I think it was a St. Louis player knocked down a 58-yard field goal, though.
Really?
So I was like, okay, well, that guy's going to get a tryout in the NFL, but... Again, it's like, yeah, you know, you go into it knowing that, okay, most of these guys were cut from NFL rosters. There's a reason they're in the XFL. So the quality of play is only going to be so high.
Yeah, cut from an NFL roster or didn't even make one to begin with.
Our dude from Globe Tech out there. Now, he was briefly with the Giants, but it's like, all right, well, you played college football at Globe Tech.
Yeah, you're a practice squatter at the best.
Maybe. Last question to close out the 5 at 5, though. Yesterday was Ric Flair's birthday. I swear that man is immortal at this point in time.
He really is.
If he hasn't left us
and
by
he's,
now.
Wasn't he at the Lakers game?
Yeah, he was at the Lakers game last night.
Last night.
And introducing LeBron.
Yeah, it was because it was LeBron and Zion.
That's right. It was. But yeah, favorite Ric Flair moment for you. Do you have one?
Well... I mean, it's real. I mean, I don't know if there's one specific one, but it's really any of those like old interviews that he used to do on World Championship Wrestling Saturday Night with Tony Schiavone.
Yep.
Where he would tell him to, you know, hold my Rolex. I don't know how much that suit cost. But yeah, basically just any of those interviews where, I mean, he was as good a promo cutter. I mean, he was the best. Arn Anderson, I think, was always kind of underrated next to Flair, but really there's been no one better. Roddy Piper was good, but Flair was the master. So I don't know if there's like one specific one with him, but just like, I mean, yeah, but to me, like those were, for me, like those are better than Ric Flair actually wrestling.
Yeah,
and Ric Flair was a really good wrestler. I mean, he was a good performer in the ring, obviously, but I mean, really, it was the interviews that he did that made him.
I have one moment that sticks out to me. I want to say he was 60 at this point in time, and it was at WrestleMania 22, and he was in the Money in the Bank ladder match, and he took a suplex off of a ladder from Matt Hardy. Not a suplex. I think it was a side effect. Anyway, Ric Flair went from the top of the ladder to back first on the canvas at like 60 years old. And you know, you and I were talking about shoots and works earlier. They did a work where the referees threw up the X's, which makes it look like a legitimate injury, and they hauled him to the back. And you think, oh God, Ric Flair's really, really hurt. Well, 5 minutes later, he comes hobbling back down the ramp and just starts clearing house in the ring.
Okay.
That, again, it was a work. You know, that was part of the plan, but... That's a Ric Flair moment that always sticks out to me.
Well, if you want to talk about an achievement in the ring when he was he was number one or number two at the Royal Rumble in I think 92.
Yep.
And won it. Mm-hmm. So he went wire to wire and won the Royal Rumble.
Speaking of Ric Flair, and if you ever get caught up in the archives of the WWE Network watching some of his old matches, pay attention to the ring wear that he has on for big matches. If he's wearing red trunks, he probably loses.
Oh, is that right?
That was kind of his wink to the audience that nobody knew about until years later.
Oh.
So, you know,
Versus, go back and notice that then.
Versus Macho Man, you know, Roddy Piper, Dusty Rhodes. Like, if he's wearing red trunks, there's a good chance he's probably going
to
lose.
Yeah, because that was a great feud when he went to the WWF and he feuded with the Macho Man mm-hmm. and, you know, pretended he had, like, naked photos of Elizabeth. And that was a pretty good post-match,
yep.
too.
Yep.
The interview he does with Mr. Perfect is his mm-hmm. is his henchman.
Yep.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, for Flair, it was more of just him running his mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, his matches were really always good, too. But Flair was just, you know, basically, you go on YouTube and just watch any video of him getting interviewed. And it's fantastic.
He's one of those rare people, not just in wrestling, but in sports in general, that's been able to completely transcend, you know, their sport. Like, everybody knows who Ric Flair is. You don't have to watch wrestling or have ever watched wrestling to know who he is.
But now, it's like, the crazy thing about him now is he shows up everywhere.
He does. He's a fan of every single team in the country.
I think he lives around here now, so he goes to the Falcons training camps.
He had the daughter that was on the track team here.
Yeah. But he used to hang out at the Blind Pig downtown.
Really?
Yeah. I think he had to cut down on his drinking, though, since he has had several near-death experiences.
Yes, he has.
But then, you know, he shows up like at Florida football games.
Yep.
He shows up at football games here, doesn't he?
Oh yeah.
And
football games, basketball games, track meets when the when his daughter was on the track team. He regularly posts like short videos on Twitter.
Well, yeah, he was actually on game day when they were here for Notre Dame.
Yes, he was.
But then, you know, and then last night all of a sudden he's at the Staples Center.
Yeah.
Oh, like, okay.
Well, he's got the money to fly across the country on a whim if he wants to.
Yeah, he does. All right, that's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.